All right, I'm trying to get this on my. One second, folks. It's not working, Neil. I don't know why.
Let's see.
So I'm usually I just click on the share button and I can just get onto my computer files.
Yeah, so there's some tabs at the top. It should say something like basic on the top,
Got it.
advanced and files. And basic should show what all of your programs are that are open and running right now. So if you've got PowerPoint running, it should show up under the basic section.
Here, let me open it up. I apologize, it's probably the issue. Do you see that?
Nope.
Yeah. All right, let me just try to. There we go. Sorry, that's my problem. All right, problem solved. You should see that now, right? Do you see that now?
Yep.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Okay, so once again, I've had folks ask me to share the notes that I'm using so they can read along and such. I'm indebted to several commentaries. The Bible Knowledge Commentary is one of my favorite. Also, my friend Jeff Takacs, who I've liberally borrowed from, including the quote we're going to see in just a minute. Tonight, we'd like to cover Genesis 32 and 33. I need to do that to get a brother Joel in line before he breaks for vacation. I'm looking forward to his presentation on Genesis 34. So let's begin then. As I mentioned, I borrowed from Jeff this quotation. I just love it. It's important to keep in mind that Genesis is a book that Moses is writing to the Exodus Jews, the children of Israel. Why is that? To remind them of where they came from, and that is God who has separated a people to himself, the Israelites, as it's described in the Psalms, the apple of his eye. We are looking, again, as I mentioned before, at a block, Genesis 29 through 33, that displays how God kept his promise to bless Jacob abundantly, and also show how God disciplined this patriarch in the process. And boy, have we seen some discipline, and we're going to see a little bit more tonight, definitely. This is a map that shows the basic journey that Jacob is on. As you recall, we began in Beersheba, where Jacob has deceived his brother Esau, and then he, his mother, per his mother's counsel, he flees from there or leaves, and he begins a journey to Bethel, and then ultimately to Haran in Padan Aram. Tonight, as we saw last time, he had left that place and is traveling back to the promised land per God's instruction, and we're going to pick up where we left off last time. Last time we saw in Genesis 30, verses 25 to 43, Jacob's agreement with Laban. And in that particular case, Laban asked Jacob to define his wages, and Jacob says, "You shall not give me anything. If you will do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep your flocks." And I'm using the New King James here. "Let me pass through all your flock today, removing from there all the speckled and spotted sheep, and all the brown ones among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats. And these shall be my wages." I don't know why I was kicked off a slideshow. Sorry about that. I'm not sure what's happened. I'm not sure why I'm getting kicked off of slideshow, but if you can still see the screen there. So Jacob had prospered mightily in fulfillment of God's promise at Bethel. And this, of course, is at the expense of Laban. Laban kind of is receiving the payback due him for all of his deception. And of course, this is a testimony to the blessing of God. Jacob prospers, Laban does not, and Jacob returned unharmed to his homeland. Last time we saw in the beginning of chapter 31.
You can hit the unhide button.
Hide button.
See at the top, it says hide slide, and it's depressed. So if you click it one more time where it says hide slide, just a little lower and to your right.
Nope.
Right in the toolbar, right below the slideshow menu.
Hide slide, got it.
Hide slide.
I've hit it.
And there, now it's, so everything with the, with a number and a slash through it is hidden. That's why the slideshow ends. So maybe afterwards you can.
Does that work now? Okay.
Well, you're not in slideshow view now, so.
Let's just, should we try this again?
Yeah, you unhid one of them and there's several that are hidden. C6 is also hidden. It's got a slash through it. So if you hit the hide slide, it'll unhide it.
Okay.
There you go. And then you'll probably all the rest after that. So I can help you fix it after if you want.
Okay. Well, yeah, we'll just continue then. I think that should be fine here.
Sorry.
Do you see this right now, the flight from Laban and the protection by God?
Yeah.
Okay, so as we saw in the beginning of 31, Jacob left for Canaan for two interrelated reasons here. We've got Laban's anger, and secondly, God told Jacob to return to his own land. So he receives this divine call to leave, and he obeys. Here's a little bit of tension here between Laban and Jacob, and we follow this route from Paddan Aram back down to ultimately to Succoth. Here we see the route that he's taking. One final note here in chapter 31, in the boundary settlement that Jacob and Laban agreed to, as we saw last time, Jacob makes a decisive break with the east, and now the family of Israel returns back to the land of Canaan here. So he undoes essentially what was happening before in the sense of searching for a wife. Now he heads back to the land of Canaan. Now we have okay. So let's go to chapter 32 and let's begin reading the first two verses here. So Jacob went on his way and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's camp." And he called the name of the place Mahanaim, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, literally double camp. So God prepared Jacob for meeting Esau by giving the patriarch a vision of angels. Jacob had just left Laban, was about to return to the land to face Esau once again. At this point, God's invisible world openly touched Jacob's visible world. And this encounter is described in a few words, just literally, the angels of God met him. Jacob then named the place Mahanaim, two camps. And he must have seen the camp of angels as a source of comfort to his own camp as he prepared to re-enter the land. Here, a comparison with Jacob's earlier encounter with angels is important here. The expression the angels of God occurs in chapter 32 and also in chapter 28. It's the only time in the Old Testament. The Hebrew word reached occurs in Genesis 28:11, and the Hebrew word in 32 verse 1 is met. So the Hebrew word this is used four times and is an important reference in Jacob's response. So we've got some examples here. This is the gate of heaven, chapter 28 verse 17. This is the camp of God, chapter 32 verse 2. So in both cases, Jacob interpreted what he had seen before naming it. And in Hebrew, the identical expression is used in the naming of both places. So finally, the Hebrew words to go on one's way are used in both 28:20 and 32 verse 1. So these names take meaning here. Here, clearly the two passages are related. What took place in the naming of Bethel and Jacob's way out of the land now took place at the naming of Mahanaim on his way back into the land. Jacob gets a glimpse of the angels of God, and this assures him once again of divine protection accompanying him. And this goes all the way back to his prayer that he prays at Bethel. God told him that he would be with him every step of the way. And as Jacob begins to mature, he begins to see that and feel that. So we have the angels welcoming him on his return to the land of promise. This assurance came at a time when Jacob really needed it. He is in fear right now of what his brother is going to do to him based on what he did 20 years ago and just basically ripping his brother off. Here's the application. When God's work is involved, the conflict is spiritual, not physical. This is true for Jacob. This is true for Israel, and it's true for us today. No human effort can be sufficient for these things. The source of defense and the means of victory come from God's ministering angels. We think of what it says in Hebrews chapter 1. Isn't our protection, I'm paraphrasing, coming from these angels of God, which are ministering to those who have inherited the word of life, right? Us. So very much in line with that. Let's read verses 3 through 8 in chapter 32. Then Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, in the land of Seir, the field country of Edom. Verse 4, and he commanded them, saying, speak thus to my lord Esau. Thus your servant Jacob says, I have dwelt with Laban and stayed there until now. Verse 5, I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, and male and female servants, and I have sent to tell my lord that I may find favor in your sight. Then the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, we came to your brother Esau, and he's also coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him. So Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that were with him and the flocks and herds and camels into two companies, two camps. And he said, if Esau comes to the one company and attacks it, then the other company, which is left, will escape. So what we see here is, kind of prompted by the idea and the vision, Jacob sent messengers to Esau in Edom. Here we have the Hebrew word for angels, also meaning the word messenger. Here the Bible Knowledge Commentary makes this comment. Many key ideas and word plays are in this section. Jacob had just seen the angels, God's messengers, and now he sent his own messengers to Esau. He had recognized the angels as the camp of God. He had named the place two camps, and then out of fear of Esau, who was coming toward him with 400 men, he divided his family into two groups or camps. Let's read verses 9 through 12 as we keep moving. Then Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, the Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your family, and I will deal well with you. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which you have shown your servant, for I crossed over this Jordan with my staff, and now I've become two companies. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come back and attack me and the mother with the children. For you said, I will surely treat you well and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So out of fear, Jacob prayed to be delivered. And this is kind of characteristic of a lot of God's servants. They're doing their ministry in fear. There is no doubt Jacob remembered Esau's threat to kill him. I think it's pretty clear that Esau threatened him. Jacob would still fear, but he would see that God would deliver him from his brother. In fact, Jacob's deep fear shows up in every section of this passage, even in his prayer. Jacob addressed God as the God of my father Abraham and the God of my father Isaac, and reminded God of his command for him to return to his country and of his promise to bless him. And as we've talked about several times in this block, as Jacob begins to mature, he prays God's words back to him. He begins to rely on God more and more as his own personal failures and his own recognition of his own ability to manipulate the situation begins to dawn on him. One of the things I just mentioned here as a note, one of the things I saw as a new believer is people making decisions based on what the scriptures would say. maybe I mentioned this before. I remember as a new believer, I saw a particular family that I knew make decisions about where to put the excess money that they had, you know, where to give it to folks based on what the Bible said. Or I would see people praying God's prayers back to them. And particularly, I saw this at like the funeral of a believer, where you feel as if, what words can you really say during this sometimes very awkward time? And people would just pray the scriptures back to God. And I think he wants to hear that. In this particular case, Jacob's doing the same thing. So Jacob confesses his unworthiness of God's kindness and faithfulness and material blessings. And he had the correct attitude in prayer, total dependency on God. Jacob petitions God to be delivered from Esau because the younger twin was scared. He's scared out of his mind as to what's going to happen. Then he repeated the promise God made to him about his descendants becoming as numberless as the sand of the sea. We saw this in Genesis 22. All this should have built Jacob's confidence, but of course he has this nagging guilt and fear, and it's completely controlling him at this point. As we're moving along here, let's take a look at the next block of verses 13 through 21, chapter 32. Verse 13, so he lodged there that same night and took what came to his hand as a present for Esau, his brother, 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 cows, 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 foals. Verse 16, then he delivered them to the hand of his servants, every drove by itself, and said to his servants, pass over before me and put some distance between successive droves. So he's sending out these groups ahead to try to pacify his brother here. Verse 17, and he commanded the first one, saying, when Esau, my brother, meets you and asks you, saying, to whom do you belong and where are you going? Whose are these in front of you? Then you shall say, They are your servant Jacob's. It is a present sent to my lord Esau, and behold, he is also behind us. So he commanded the second, the third, and all who followed the drove, saying, in this manner you shall speak to Esau when you find him. And also say, behold, your servant Jacob is behind us. For he said, I will appease him with the present that goes before me, and afterward I will see his face. Perhaps he will accept me. So the present went on over before him, but he himself lodged that night in the camp. So he's trying to appease Esau, Jacob taking a portion of his blessing, and he's preparing a gift for Esau. And here, the Hebrew word is a word that means to give a gift to a superior to gain favor. Jacob sent Esau goats, camels, sheep, cattle, donkey, 550 animals in all, not counting the young camels. This is a massive gift. And he thought these five herds sent separately, or these five droves, would impress Esau and pacify him. He's doing everything possible to kind of soften Esau for this eventual meeting. Jacob would actually learn later that God would have delivered him without such gifts. And I think this is the picture of the believer's life so many times. We're manipulating things only to realize that God has a solution that we haven't even thought of. And so too, the nation would need to learn that deliverance comes by faith in God. Again, this idea of Moses writing these things down to teach Israelites about their history and to avoid some of these issues. And also later on in the Kings, the nation is going to learn that God is going to deliver them, not giving tribute or paying money to another nation to protect them. As the Lord has said many times about Egypt, you're leaning on a broken reed. They're not going to help you. So this passage closes with a significant word play in verse 21 that shows how contrary this gift was to the vision of verse 1 that assured him of protection. The gift went on ahead of him, but he spent the night in the camp. As we just continue to move along here, verses 22 through 32, and he arose at night and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons, and crossed over the ford of Jabbok. He took them, sent them over the brook, and sent over what he had. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. Now when he saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. So before Jacob could cross this river, Jabbok River, after his family, servants, and possessions, a man attacked and fought with him. There's not a lot of details given of the fight. It was just the introduction to the more important piece, which is the dialogue that's going to follow. But the fight was real and it was physical. Here we have this Hebrew word, ish, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. It's just a man. It doesn't reveal very much about this man's identity, but it's fitting, for the man later refused to reveal himself directly. Verse 29. The fact that the match lasted till daybreak is significant, for the darkness symbolized Jacob's situation. Fear and uncertainty controlled and took a hold of him. If Jacob had perceived that he was to fight God, he would have never engaged in the fight, let alone have continued all night. See, Jacob is desperate at this point. On the other hand, the fact that the wrestling lasted till daybreak suggests a long, decisive fight here. In fact, the wrestler or the opponent did not defeat Jacob till he resorted to something extraordinary. At last, the wrestler or the opponent touched Jacob so that his hip went out of joint. And here's the point. The wrestler slash opponent gave himself the advantage. Jacob, the deceitful fighter, was crippled by a supernatural blow. And this is something that we see later on in Genesis, where we see Jacob leaning on his staff, blessing his sons. You know, after this whole life that he engaged in, the Lord had slowed him down and taught him to rely on the Lord. And in a word, like so many of his rivals, Jacob now encountered someone he couldn't defeat. Let's look at verses 26 through 29. And he, wrestler opponent, said, "Let me go, for the day breaks." But he said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So he said to him, "What's your name?" And he said, "Jacob." And he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked, saying, "Tell me your name, I pray." And he said, "Why is it that you ask about my name?" And he blessed him there. So even though Jacob is crippled and he's unable to win, Jacob refused to let go of this wrestler opponent for a blessing. Then both the identity of the wrestler opponent and the significance of the fight dawned on Jacob finally. Once he realized who his wrestler opponent was, verse 28, Jacob held on firmly, pleading for a blessing. And this is significant. That in response to Jacob's request for blessing, the man asked, "What is your name?" Here we must remember that in the Old Testament, one's name is linked to his nature, and the point becomes clear. Jacob's pattern of life had to be radically changed. In saying his name, Jacob had to reveal his whole nature. He had to confess who he was. Here the heel catcher was caught and had to confess his true nature before he could be blessed by God. And the blessing took the form of a new name, Israel. This name probably means God fights. Other translations may have Prince of God. And the explanation was then given that Jacob had fought with God and with men. And it's easy to understand as having fought with men, but that he fought with God is more difficult to understand. Throughout Jacob's entire life, he had been dragging God's blessing out under all circumstances for his own use, under his own steam, or when it was convenient. He was too self-willed and too proud to let the blessing be given to him. So God fights is now his name. And this meant, number one, that God chose, because of the patriarch's stubbornness and pride, to fight against him. And number two, it meant that God would fight for Israel. And God, the sense that you get in the scriptures is that God liked this. He liked someone who was willing to fight for something that was significant. It meant that this patriarch had finally gotten to the point where he could see that holding on to God and not letting go was much more important than anything else. And he learns a lesson here. Jacob's new name would remind him and others of this fight in which he had overcome. These words were full of hope to all of the Israelites going forward. If one could contend successfully with God, then they could win the battle with man. So it's sort of like the reasoning from the lesser to the greater. If you can wrestle and prevail with God, sort of there ain't nothing else that you're not going to prevail against here. Again, Moses is writing these things to remind them of their heritage. That's the name God fights, and the explanation that Jacob had overcome obtained the significance of a promise for the nation's forthcoming struggles. And those struggles are going to continue for sure. A couple more verses here, verse 30, chapter 32. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. Just as he crossed over Peniel, the sun rose on him and he limped on his hip. Some of the older brethren commentaries will have this. Peniel, a new day began. Therefore, to this day, the children of Israel do not eat the muscle or the tendon, the trank, which is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip in the muscle that shrank. Jacob named the place Peniel, face of God, because he had seen God face to face and had been spared. And as before, in previous chapters, he named the place to commemorate the event. God had come as close to Jacob as possible. He laid his hands on him. And the idea is not that he was so much spared, but rather his life was spared. He had prayed for deliverance using this Hebrew word, save me, the same word he used later, spared. So Jacob's prayer for deliverance was answered by God in this face-to-face encounter and blessing. When God touched the strongest tendon of the wrestler, it shriveled, and with it, Jacob's persistent self-confidence also shriveled. His human and carnal weapons were lame and useless, and they failed him in this contest with God. What he had supposed for the past 20 years now dawned on him. He was in the hands of the one against whom it's useless to struggle against. So, as we saw before, Jacob's life now takes a different turn. After this crippling touch, Jacob's struggle took a new direction. He's now crippled. So think about it. He's given away all of his wealth. He pushed all of that ahead of him. His plans and all the machinations he's engaged in, he's used them all. And now he's crippled. And now he's got to face his brother, who might have been stewing for 20 years over the fact that he ripped him off and ran away. And so, like others in the Bible, certainly Moses met by God when he had not yet really fully obeyed God's will, Jacob's encounter was at the frontier of the land promised to the seed of Abraham. God, the real owner or landlord of the land, opposed his entering as Jacob, the deceiver, the heel catcher. In his self-will and in his own strength, he could never enter the land. So the point of the story for the new nation of Israel that would come from Egypt into the land of the promise, and land of promise, is crystal clear. Israel's ultimate victory would come not by the usual ways by which nations gain power, but through the power of the divine blessing. Self-sufficiency is incompatible with the work of God in any age. Faith alone overcomes the world. And this is very much the point of the Hall of Fame of Faith in Hebrews 11. We see faith manifesting itself in the believers that are shown in that chapter. Faith is the evidence of things not seen, the working out of what was in their heart, certainly. So let's turn to chapter 33 as we take the last final minutes of the study here. This is chapter 3, verses 1 through 7. Now Jacob lifted his eyes and looked, and there Esau was coming, and with him 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two maidservants, and he put the maidservants and their children in front, Leah and her children behind, and Rachel and Joseph last. Then he crossed over before them, bowed himself to the ground seven times until he came near to his brother. But Esau ran and met him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And he lifted up his eyes and saw the women and children and said, "Who are these with you?" And so he said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." And the maidservant came near, they and their children, and bowed down. And Leah also came near with her children, and they bowed down. Afterward, Joseph and Rachel came near, and they bowed down. So Jacob still showed weakness and fear when he met Esau. He lined up his children and wives in order of their importance to him, and Rachel and Joseph were in the rear, the safest place. Of course, he sends his wives and children first, sort of not the manliest thing to do, but certainly he did it. And now we have these contrasts between the two brothers as they met after 20 years. Jacob bows down to the ground 7 times in honoring his brother, and he halted on his way toward Esau in fear, probably, or just anticipation of what might happen. Esau, however, eagerly ran to meet Jacob and embraced him, kissed him, and they both wept. What a change is made when God fights in his way. And of course, what Jacob didn't realize was that God had blessed Esau beyond belief, just like he had blessed Ishmael. He had blessed Esau with many, many material things and gave him wisdom to build a kingdom, certainly. In talking with Esau, Jacob constantly referred to himself as your servant or his servant, and to his brother as my lord, whereas Esau simply called Jacob my brother. And this contrasts with their father's blessing when Isaac made Jacob Esau's lord. Jacob definitely approached Esau cautiously and humbly in an effort to ward off a fight or that long-awaited retaliation from Esau. Let's look at verses 8 through 11. When Esau said, "What do you mean by all this company which I met?" And he said, "These are to find favor in the sight of my lord." Esau said, I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself. And Jacob said, "No, please. If I have now found favor in your sight, then receive my present from my hand, inasmuch as I have seen your face as though I had seen the face of God, and you were pleased with me. Please, take my blessing that is brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough." So he urged him, and he took it. Jacob presses Esau to accept the gift of 550 animals, and when Esau hesitates to accept livestock, Jacob insists, and he says, "Accept this," or literally, "my gift," the same word that he used in 32, verse 13. Then Jacob added, "Accept my present." The word present comes from the Hebrew word to bless. By using this Hebrew word, Jacob showed that he was deliberately wanting to share his blessing with Esau, the very blessing that he stole before, trying to soften his earlier actions. Jacob's explanation that seeing Esau's face was like seeing the face of God showed that he knew this deliverance from harm by Esau was of God. At Peniel, Jacob had seen the face of God and was delivered. Having lived through that, he then survived Esau. Thus, Esau's favorable reaction was God's gracious dealing. So Jacob is learning a lot here. Final verses here as we finish up for tonight. Verse 12, chapter 33 of Genesis. And Esau said, "Let us take our journey. Let us go, and I will go before you." But Jacob said to him, "My Lord knows that the children are weak, and the flocks and herds which are nursing are with me. And if the men should drive them hard one day, all the flock will die. Please let my Lord go on ahead before his servant. I will lead on slowly at a pace which livestock that go on before me can handle, and the children are able to endure until I've come to my Lord and Seer." Verse 15, then Esau said, "Let me leave with you some of the people who are with me." But he said, "What need is there? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord." So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir, and Jacob journeyed to Succoth, built himself a house, and made booths for his livestock. Therefore, the name of the place is called Succoth. So Jacob cleverly avoids traveling with Esau. He's clever, he's shrewd. These are words, shrewd particular, a word that is both clever and slightly deceptive. He led Esau to think that he needed to travel slowly because of his young children and young animals, and that he would meet with Esau at Seir. But Jacob headed in the opposite direction, north to Succoth, east of the Jordan River, and north of the Jabbok River also, instead of south to Seir. He may have been wise to avoid Edom, but he did not need to deceive his brother again. So some final words here. So the miracles were worked in Jacob and Esau. In Jacob, God brought about a spirit of humility and generosity, and Esau was changed from seeking revenge to desiring reconciliation. And these changes were proof that God had delivered Jacob in answer to his prayer back in Genesis 32, verse 11. Well, I appreciate your patience. I certainly can pause here if anybody has any questions or comments. I know there was a lot of material, but.
This is Neil. Nice job, Ray. And I wanted to, you know, just mention that this has always been one of the more puzzling verses or sections in the Bible for me in terms of Jacob wrestling with God. And, you know, I've heard it since I was a kid, the story. And, you know, just the fact that God wrestles with Jacob and prevails, and seemingly God has to, you know, handicap him to even go on about his day. Now, I'm, you know, that's a silly way of saying it, but, you know, in a kid's perspective, that's what I always very puzzled about it. And, you know, but then when you think of about it as a whole, I mean, God allows us to prevail in many ways, and the Bible is full of that. In many ways, God doesn't drop the hammer every single time, that as he could in every single instance. So it's a puzzling story, but yet it's very similar to all the other stories in the Bible where God is patient with man and merciful.
That's right, and he doesn't humiliate us. I remember Bruce has said that many times in the past, and I think it's very true. He's looking for our maturity. Any other thoughts?
So I think it follows a little bit on what we learned at the men's retreat, thinking about discipleship and following the Lord on a regular basis. And one of the things Dan emphasized is that we're enjoined to seek, and we'll find a knock, and it'll be open to us, and ask, and it shall be given unto you. And I take it this wrestling match is really an Old Testament demonstration of really asking of God and expecting an answer and victory through our relationship with the Lord.